Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Choice we face. One of us is ready to be commander in chief in a dangerous world. Every day around the world, situations arise that present new threats and new opportunities. Situations like the change of leadership in Cuba today. I have served on the Armed Services Committee. I've been to more than 80 countries. Worked with world leaders, stood up to the Chinese government to declare that women's rights are human rights.
Yay. My friends, we've traveled a great distance together already in this campaign overcome more than a few obstacles. But as I said last week, now comes the hard part. And for America, the bigger decision.
You're not kidding. Getting the conservatives
is the
hard part.
To restore the people's trust in their government. And meet the great challenges of our time with wisdom
and with faith in
the values and ability of Americans.
No, you have
for
no
whom
wisdom.
No challenge is greater than their resolve, courage, and patriotism.
We are going to lead by example.
Okay,
by
lead us by the nose.
Highest standards of civil liberties and human rights.
Which is
why I will close Guantanamo and restore habeas corpus and say no to torture.
Just say no to torture. How nice. So here's a man who's written nothing that anyone knows of, has never said a word anybody can remember, has not written or authored one bill anybody knows of. But the fools who believe that global warming is caused by SUVs, not by activity on the sun, the fools who believe in Santa Claus, in other words, all of the shibboleths of the left, believe that this unknown, invisible creation, Barack Obama, can save the world. Welcome to the Savage Nation. The front page of the Old York Times, the antiquated newspaper that your father used to read, has a headline that's a scream. This is a keeper. I'm going to save this in my collection of just wonderful moments of the Old York Times. There's a glowing picture of Fidel Castro, not, of course, torturing people, not having them executed. And the headline says, Castro quits, but casts a wide shadow in Cuba. This is utterly unbelievable. No reference to his dictatorship. No reference to the tyranny. No reference to the murders. No reference to the prison cells. No reference to the Isle of Pines, where AIDS patients are quarantined. It's astounding the level of propaganda that I see. And I'm in the business of pointing out the propaganda of the American left, as exemplified by the newspapers and by Major League Television. But I'm floored every day by what I see. And, a little article came along to us and to others from a blog. By the man's name is Michael Graham. And he found a letter, an internal letter from CNN, that was sent out to all of its anchors telling them how to treat the subject of Fidel Castor oil in the early morning email. They were told that Fidel Castor oil was supposed to be treated in the following way. Here's some points on Fidel Castor oil to our anchor reads reporting. One, please say in our reporting that Castor oil stepped down in a letter he wrote to Grandma, the Communist Party Daily, as opposed to a letter attributed to Fidel Castor oil. Please note Fidel did bring social reforms to Cuba, namely free education and universal health care and racial integration, in addition to being criticized for oppressing human rights and freedom of speech. I'm reading from an actual letter from a woman named Allison Flexner, sent Tuesday, February 19th, to the CNN Superdesk, TBS, copies to Neil Morgan, Darlington Shasta, subject Castro Guidance. She then goes on, whoever this Alison Plant is, and says, while despised by some, he is seen as a revolutionary hero, especially with leftists in Latin America for standing up to the United States. Any questions, please call the international desk, Alison. In my day, the FBI is in there. Alison is taken out in handcuffs, and Alison is underneath a hot light for 68 hours until she describes when is she getting money and where is she getting it from, who in Cuba supplies her with the money, and how long has she been working for the enemy. In my day, the agency closes down CNN as an operative of the enemy. In my day, we had a nation. We no longer have a nation. We have a conglomeration of interests that collide with each other. Welcome to the Savage Nation. So it's a little agitating that we have no central government anymore. We have a central cast with central casting, but no central government. And if you look on michaelsavage.com in San Francisco, the mayor, Annie Tuesome Newsom, has just added a new position to the city. The city's bankrupt, but he wants to make the city the greenest city in the nation, since it's already the dirtiest city in the nation, morally and physically. Mayor Annie Tuesome Newsom created a $160,000 a year job for senior aide on climate change. In other words, they're going to play God with the climate. These schmucks, they can't clean the gutters of San Francisco of bums. They can't clean the dirt off the streets. They can't get the snot and the vomit and the urine off the streets and out of the mailboxes, but he's going to alter the climate of the universe. This is liberalism for you folks. For those of you who live in the Midwest, an Islamic prayer tower has rising over South St. Louis City. An Islamic prayer tower, complete with loudspeakers, in the middle of America's heartland, has arisen. If you don't believe me, go on to michaelsavage.com and you'll see the future of America. Oh, there are many other stories. Let's see what else we have for you. Asians, not whites, hurt most by race-conscious admissions. Well, I've known that for at least 30 years. The Asians are very family-oriented, very education-oriented, as we all know. Generally, I mean, it's generalizing, but we can generalize pretty good, since if you go to the University of California at Berkeley, you'll see so many Asian people because they study hard. They learn hard, and they have brains, and they're willing to put off immediate pleasure for the future. They know how to, in other words, wait for a reward. They don't need it instantly. It's part of the culture to wait for the reward. Consequently, they can sustain learning over a long period of time, so they're good students. I personally wouldn't care if the University of California at Berkeley was 100% Asian if they based it strictly on grades. I would take that. It doesn't matter to me what the race is. To me, it's the brains and the ability to apply the brains. So I know why they're getting shafted. It's because other minorities who are not as family-oriented and as, let's say, education-oriented as Asian people are being put ahead of them to the detriment of the universities and the nation as a whole. 1-800-449-8255. There's nothing you can say yet. California's budget gap at $16 billion. That's right. Arnold Strudenegger, the man who bluffed his way into the governorship based upon a steroid appearance. We don't know whether the steroids affected the man's brains, but we certainly know it affected the man's biceps. Here is a Muscle Beach character who made a fortune as an actor simply on his Aryan good looks, who uses his Aryan good looks to become the governor of the state, hoodwinking the people of the state into thinking he's a conservative, saying he's going to straighten out the budget deficit, which was then $15 billion. It's now $16 billion. Presto, magico, he ballooned the government of the state of California to such an extent that it now went up rather than down as it was under a liberal. And for those of you following the Middle East, a senior aide to so-called Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas says the Palestinians should follow the Kosovo example and declare independence. See, this is what we've been warning you about is what's going to happen. Soon we'll hear somebody from Mexico claiming that Arizona, New Mexico, Southern California, and Texas have always been part of Mexico, and there should be a new nation called Azteca, and that all of the gringos must get out and leave their property behind. We'll find out what Rob Reiner and the morons of Hollywood have to say at that point when they have to abandon their Beverly Hills mansions to MS-13. Now, I've told you that there's an epidemic of heroic suicides and homicides related to Prozac. I have told you that antidepressants will one day be looked upon the way thalidomide is now looked upon. If you remember anything about drugs, thalidomide was used as a mild tranquilizer, I believe, in the 1950s. And then, unfortunately, they didn't know it at the time. It caused birth defects in unborn fetuses. Of course, a fetus is unborn humans who are fetuses. And many unfortunates were born with terrible birth anomalies as a direct result of taking thalidomide, and rightly so. Thalidomide was then removed from the market. How many decades is it going to take for a congressman who are owned lock, stock, and barrel by lobbyists to ban the use of Prozac-like compounds, which have, unfortunately, terrible side effects related to homicides and suicides? I predicted this. It now came out that the girlfriend says the shooter was taking a cocktail of three drugs prescribed by the whack job psychiatrist at the university. Reports of Gunman's use of antidepressant renews debate over side effects. I've been telling you this for 10 years. I've been telling you about Ritalin since 1982 when I wrote Healing Children Naturally. I'm always ahead of my time by at least 20 years. I'm not slightly ahead of my time. That's my problem. If I was slightly ahead of my time, I'd be okay, but I'm a little too far ahead of my time. And that's part of my, you know, problem. I mean, some of you get it and some of you don't. And that's the story. So this is the Savage Nation. Those are some of the problems. Those are some of the solutions. Savage's Eye Camera, a new feature of my website, which I can't do on the radio. I walk around the city and I take pictures as I see them. Bums, scenery, being swarmed in Chinatown during a shopping spree when they try to elbow you off the street. But since I grew up in New York, I know how to make my elbow as sharp as theirs. I don't know what it is. They always aim for me. It seems like they're always aiming at me. So I have to extend my elbows left and right when I walk through the streets of that part of town. Strangely enough, otherwise they push you in the gutter. It's not aimed. There's no racism on their part. They go for weakness. They think if you're weak, they can push you into the gutter like a pigeon. Go figure. Well, luckily I read much Chinese philosophy where they said anyone can be saintly when they're sitting in a meditation chamber. Anyone can be saintly sitting in a meditation studio. Anyone can be saintly when listening to a guru. But he said the test of your decency as a human being or lack thereof is how you behave on the elbow-thrashing levels of humanity. I thought that was a great line, the elbow-thrashing levels of humanity, which to me is where it's at. That's where it's really happening. So whether it's being swarmed in Chinatown and knowing how to extend your elbows in a semi-martial pose to give it to them before they give it to you, or let us say even in a supermarket. Have you seen the maniacs in supermarkets and how they come at your hands with shopping carts? They're pretty good at it. They aim mainly for single women, I've noticed. The mean old white men are the worst offenders in supermarkets, to be fair to the discussion. The ones who have either never been married or lost their wives and are out of work usually aim for the fingers of single white women with shopping carts. I'll be right back.
Savage.
America's Most Sinful Cities. Forbes.com did an article, and here's America's Most Lustful Cities. Residents of these metros enjoy vigorous sex lives. How would they know that? Oh, by their condom and contraceptive purchases. Okay. Number one, would you believe this? Denver, Colorado? San Antonio, Portland, Oregon is number three. Seattle is four. San Francisco's not up there. How do you like that? So I'm actually living in a city that's not even in the top 10 of sin. America's greediest cities. Now, what do you mean greediest? The 10 U cities that have the most individual fortunes. This is so left-wing, such garbage. You mean if you're rich, you're greedy? And if you're poor, you're generous? Is that how it works? San Jose is number one, number two, San Francisco, number six, New York, number eight, Los Angeles. They're ridiculous. See, here's the problem that I found out. It was too late in my life. It ruined my mind. It rotted it out. I grew up as an impressionable youth, so I read every book I could get my hands on. Novels, history, biography. I thought they were written by intelligent, thoughtful, morally upstanding people. Little did I know until I got older when I met writers that they were amongst the sickest, most degenerate people in our society. And they were, you know, in other words, like, what? Who's a novelist? You hold them up as a role model. They're usually people who have fractured lives trying to fix their broken lives through a novel where they create a work of art. A work of art is not a reflection of the individual necessarily. It's a reflection of a world they would like to see exist. So how did I know that the writers of these books were crackpots? Now you get to journalism. It's even lower, 10 rungs down the ladder. And who goes into journalism? Somebody who can't do anything else. I mean, I'm sorry if you're in the field, if you're from another generation, it didn't necessarily apply. But you and I both know that the only people who go into journalism now are those who can't do anything else. They can't do anything in the web, and they can't make a website. It's a step up from McDonald's. So who would say that if the cities that have the most individual fortunes are therefore America's greediest cities? You could also say that the 10 cities that have the most individual fortunes are the most cities with the most intelligent, dynamic people. But no, if you're raised in a communist university, this is how you see success as greed. Envy, America's most jealous cities. Here's where property crime rates are among the nation's highest. 1, Memphis, Tennessee. 2, Charlotte, Mecklenburg, North Carolina. 3, San Antonio. 4, Seattle. 5, Providence. 6, Phoenix. 7, Salt Lake. 8, Columbus. 9, Oklahoma. 10, Chicago. America's most murderous cities. 1, Detroit. 2, Baltimore, Orleans, Newark, New Jersey is 4, St. Louis, 5, Oakland, California, 6, Washington, D.C., blah, blah, blah. Gluttony, America's most obese cities. Memphis, Tennessee is number 1. How do they walk around and measure fat people? Sloth, America's most sedentary. Memphis, again. America's vainest cities. How do you measure vanity? Is there a vanity meter I don't know about? Salt Lake City is America's most vain city. How do they figure that out? On what basis? San Francisco is 2. San Jose is 4. Los Angeles is 10. This is what you call journalistic garbage. It's basura. Pay no attention to anything that you just heard on the show. Now, here you can take to the bank what I'm about to read you. People are saying talk radio is finished, talk radio is over, that we have no power. The ratings just came out for the entire industry, and guess what aspect of radio is the number one? Is it music? Is it Spanish? Is it country? Is it jazz? Is it oldies? Is it rock? Or is it, you know what it is, it's talk and news.
Savage.
As a skilled media watcher, I've been trying to wonder what it is about this creation called Obama that makes liberals swoon, faint. If you were to have created a character that would meet the most expectations for America as it is today, if you were to create one, let's say, as an artist, he'd be the perfect New Age plastic man, would be Obama. He'd be the perfect New Age plastic man with the widest appeal to the multiracial crowd. Now, what you haven't seen yet is the white crowd, the white male crowd, come out and vote. They're not voting yet. I'm trying to tell this to people. I get calls from newspapers, major publications. Is talk radio on the way out? And I keep saying the reverse is true. And they say, why do you believe that? I said, because in the primaries, you had 14 million Democrats come out for the candidates, and in the Republican side, only 8 million. So they said, what does that tell you? It tells me that the talk radio talkers have not motivated the conservative base the way we've motivated them on many issues to go out and vote for any of the candidates that were up there, Romney and McCain, because they weren't conservative enough. And I said, it's our election to make or break. In other words, if McCain continues to skirt the issues, if McCain continues to go on to the softball shows, if McCain continues to talk the talk but not walk the walk, McCain is not going to motivate the talkers in this business, and we're not going to come out for him. We may vote for him. We're not going to work for him. He may win anyway, because I'm trying to tell you that Obama's not going to win this election. I'll tell you right now, if it was McCain versus Obama, McCain wins by 20 points. The media doesn't want you to know that. Have you even seen McCain? You don't see him. They throw him as an afterthought. Just as the media is in love with Fidel Castro and Ahmadinejad, they're in love with the Democrat Party for reasons you can figure out. Put it together yourself. And, of course, there's a tremendous reaction to George Bush here. George Bush is a despised man. George Bush is hated in this country by the American left. And George Bush is despised by the Republicans in this country to a great extent. George Bush has made an embarrassment of the presidency to many, many people. So when you see a literate man like Obama, you say, wow, he'd be great. He's young, he's strong, and all of that. But in reality, he's nothing. He has no history. He is a phantom. And as I said to you, if you were creating a character for a textbook, you'd create the perfect New Age plastic man, and it would be Obama. Do you understand that? Now, again, just so you get the data correct, the best ratings ever were recorded in the fall ratings book in 2 years as news talk formats went up to account for almost 18% of all people listen to radio. We're number one. Talk and news was up to almost 18% of all people who listen to the radio listen to talk and news. You understand what I'm saying? Spanish formats were third. You keep hearing from the people, oh, Spanish is number one. It isn't. It's number three. And that format's growth is stalled. Moreover, I'll tell you right now, eventually it's going to come out to be much lower. I'm not allowed to tell you the rating system and all of that, but believe me, it's way overrated. Oldies 5.8%, rock 7.5%, alternative, whatever that means, urban, I don't know. What are these saying? Everything's PC, urban. What does urban mean? What is it, hip-hop garbage? Urban. I'm urban. I don't listen to that crap. What do you mean by urban? What does urban mean? Everyone else is a schmuck, a suburban, a rural? What's urban music mean? They mean ghetto blasters. Urban, 9.9%. Country, 9% of listeners. Oldies, 5%, whatever. All I'm telling you is that talk radio has never been healthier. Now, here's some good news to show you the power of talk radio. Here in the Savage Nation, we stopped the Dubai ports deal, meaning the takeover of the port security by folks in Dubai. I know that there are revisionists writing that we were wrong and they weren't really going to run the security, only they were going to operate the cranes. That's total garbage. They were not going to operate only the cranes. They were going to take over port security. I studied this inside and out, and you're getting a lot of revisionist garbage attacking talk radio saying we were wrong about that. And they're saying we were wrong about amnesty for the illegal aliens. Well, I cursed them all. They're pimps, and they work for the power structure. I don't. I'm an independent-minded, independent broadcaster, and this is the way I see it. We opposed the $2.2 billion offer for 3Com by the Chinese military called Banhui. Banhui is a Chinese telecommunications company owned by the Chinese military. They were trying to buy a company called 3Com. We said under no condition should the government permit this to happen because 3Com is a company that is related to sensitive military technology that could be transferred to the Chinese military through a 16.5% stake held by Huai.3Com. And they withdrew its application to CFIUS. They withdrew their offer because of talk radio. The $2.2 billion offer for 3Com made by a private equity group in Chinese telecommunications is no longer on the table, according to a person familiar with the matter. Quote, the deal is not going to proceed. This person who was not authorized to comment, spoke on condition of anonymity, shares of 3Com plunged by more than 20%. Early Wednesday, 3Com sent a press release that it was unable to satisfy the national security concerns of federal authorities reviewing this. That's unbelievable. We have federal authorities who are concerned about national security concerns? I am shocked. That's almost oxymoronic. This is almost oxymoronic. Early Wednesday, 3Com sent a press release. It was unable to satisfy the national security concerns of federal authorities reviewing the sale of the network. We have federal authorities that are concerned about national security. Who are they? They should get a Nobel Prize. I didn't know we have such people. Domain Capital Partners, LLC, and China's Y Technology Comp, which has strong ties to the Chinese military. Marlboro, Mass-based 3Com in September agreed to an offer of $5.30 a share for Bain from Huai. The deal set off alarms in Washington where lawmakers and Bush administration so-called officials have expressed concerns that sensitive military technology could be transferred to China. Okay, blah, blah, blah. So CFIUS is a 12-agency group, blah, 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 blah. So CFIUS is a rubber stamp, by the way. Basically, they're just stooges. They're rubber stampers. And why? And removed it because they didn't even want it to go to 3Com. So we won again. We have another win here. Edgar Masry, president and chief executive of 3Com, said, we are very disappointed that we were unable to reach a mitigation agreement with CFIUS for this transaction. Well, Edgar, you can always fuel up your Gulfstream, you know, at any time. You can always fuel it up and take off if you're very disappointed. blah, blah, blah. So there it is. That's very good news. I think that's great news. Bain, why offer for three? Come on the rocks. This is a story that is of interest, I would say, to about 0.9% of my audience. That's a 0.9er, maybe a 0.1er. The average person doesn't know what I'm talking about. So that you got to be careful in radio what stories you choose to talk about. I don't go by percentages. I go by importance. Like yesterday, I spent an hour and a half on Kosovo and explained to you what it's all about. I am the only one in the American media who has the historical knowledge and the brains to have told you it's the greatest ripoff in your lifetime to steal a nation from another nation by sleight of hand and call it a done deal. I never saw anything like this. And I said I'm on the side of China and Russia in this case. They're 100% right for their own reasons. And I was embarrassed to believe my government would go along with the wholesale stealing of Kosovo from Serbia. I explained this, and I know that most of the audience didn't even want to hear it. They wanted a. Then I got home after the show, and I was eating dinner, and I turned on. There's a guy. Well, I shouldn't mention names anymore because people are offended when I mention names. There's a putative conservative on CNN Headline News who's been fetching about his hemorrhoid for 3 months now. We won't mention his name. He's a man who pretends to be every man, but he's not even up to the level of every man. In other words, he acts like an average Joe because he's not even an average Joe. So he's been spending 3 months complaining about his hemorrhoid and somehow tying that into healthcare. I can't believe this. Then I clicked after that. I was eating takeout, Chinese takeout food. And there's a maniac on television. I think this woman needs to be put in a straitjacket. Nancy Graceless, straitjacket territory. Never saw anything like it. There's primaries going on, Kosovo going on. Every imaginable story, she's talking about DNA on panties. I said, I'm not seeing this. Yet, with bug eyes, crazy, psychotic eyes, obsessed, excited, with a guest in the green room of talking about DNA on panties from another rape case. This is what passes for the news in America. And I say, no wonder the people are losing their country, you know. But then back here in San Francisco, where we have liberal talk show hosts who are really, let us say, fantasists, who even use their children in their sex fantasies. For years, they disguised themselves as progressives who cared only about the downtrodden and were against Bush. And it's been a huge exposure here of the American left in ground zero for American left, left-wingism, progressivism. So he was exposed with his own writings. I mean, the idiot didn't even know the first rule, which is never put it in writing. Didn't he learn that? And did he go to progressive school somewhere? Don't they teach you that in progressive school? The first rule you learn is don't put it in writing. Why do you think organized criminals used to use nothing in writing? They would talk in code. They'd mutter. They would go to telephone booths. They would go in their hand. I mean, you've seen all the movies. Why do you think they're like what? Would they put in writing the guy wants to do his daughter, his son's? He saw his son and his son friend and excited in writing to an unknown person on the internet. This is the American left, and we're supposed to go to him now on how we should deal with the Bedouin who wants to destroy the Western world. We need him to tell us whether we should have Abu Ghraib or torture or waterboarding. It's up to him. The guy wants to molest his own daughter in his fantasies. Well, look at his son's a carrot and peas, and he eats carrots and peas kind of thing. But we have it even worse than that. There's another local story. We have a mayor, Annie Tuesem Newsom, who keeps hiring people to control the climate. Tuesem Newsom is so whacked out that he thinks he's God, that he can actually control the climate. Well, at least he knows it's a racket that the idiots will pay for another position. So he hires another person in climate control. You hear this? I never saw anything. How could you control the climate? What is this idiot going to fly in a plane and seed the clouds? What do you mean climate control, moron? But then it even gets worse. Across the bay, there's a city called Berkeley. Now, if you're a Catholic, what you should do when the word Berkeley crosses your lips or your ears, you should do the thing across left, right, head. You know, the hand, the cross. Make the sign of the cross. When you hear the word Berkeley, do the sign of the cross for all of the good people who still live there. So as you well know what happened, the city council put a group of left-wing stinkers in the streets outside the Marine recruiting station, and these stinking women who are as fetid as guava, three-week-old guava on the rainforest floor, try to block the Marine recruiting station, and the city council then backed down. But a few of the city council members in Berkeley did not back down. They're very, very proud of hating the U.S. Marines. And guess who they're blaming? Right-wing radio, right-wing hate radio. In other words, anybody who disagrees with left-wing hatred is a member of right-wing hate blogs or right-wing hate radio. You get how it works? Ah. Well, I'm proud to be a member of the organization that exposed these vermin for what they are. Unfortunately, we didn't go far enough. But then again, I live in a world where one day, after I, with your help, defeat the front group for the Muslim Brotherhood, an Egyptian terrorist group, a group called CAIR, C-A-I-R, who is trying to drive me out of radio by attacking my advertisers. Once I defeat them in the courts of law, I will, with God's will, create the Nationalist Party on November 8th, 2008, right here on this radio show. It's not going to be a one-man operation. I'm going to kick it off on this show. I'm telling you right now, there'll be a real third party, a new one, and it's going to be called the Nationalist Party, period, end of story. And it's going to be open to all who love borders, language, and culture, meaning America, period. Now I'll take your calls, okay? I have talked quite enough. We have a victory now, the Bain Y3Com on the rocks. Who is Obama? Obama was elected to the Illinois Senate in 1996 from the state's 13th district in Chicago. And as a state legislator, Obama gave us ethics and health care laws, sponsored law and antagonism. So whose seat did he take in? Whose Senate seat did he take in? In 2004, Obama was sworn in as a senator on January 4, 2005. And he beat a Republican? Who was the Republican who vacated his seat? Oh, here's something you're not going to believe. Just in case you think that there's no government media complex and there's one part, not a one-party system called the Democrats. I mean, the Democrats or Republicrats. You ready for this? Soon after being sworn in as senator, Obama took an active role in the Senate's drive for improved border security and immigration reform. In 2005, he co-sponsored the Secure America and Orderly Immigration Act introduced by Senator John McCain. Did you hear that? So he worked with McCain on amnesty, just in case you... In December of 2006, President Bushy, signed into law the Democratic Republic of the Congo Relief, Security, and Democracy Promotion Act, marking the first federal legislation to be enacted with Obama as its primary sponsor. I see. So he's Africa-oriented. That's really important, I guess. I guess if you want to send more money to Africa, you've got the right man here. Why do they call him by one name, Obama, while everyone else is John McCain, Russ Feingold? Why does everyone have two names and he has one name as though he's a movie? It's like Rambo, Obama. That's all part of the whole. You understand that? Obama defeated Alan Keyes in 2004. That wasn't too hard. Alan Keyes was too good and too smart to get elected. They saved him from a horrible life in politics. Obama also introduced the Iraq War De-escalation Act, a bill to capitulate to the enemies. Obama also sponsored a Senate amendment to the state children's health insurance program to provide Cuban-style job protection for family members caring for soldiers with combat-related injuries. In other words, if you want the health care that Castro gave the Cuban people, he's the perfect man. I'll be right back. Savage. See, we're a very weak nation. We're a nation of weaklings. This is the constant harping on medication, prescription drugs. I need my medication. I need my medication. Everyone's on a drug. Everyone's on a drug. Everyone's on medication. How many of our so-called congressmen and senators are on medication, being the lying skunks that they are? You know, they know what they are. So what do you think medication is? What do you think medication is? It's an attempt to mask your conscience. And eventually your conscience gets the best of you. So you either throw yourself off a building or you go and blow someone away. Eventually these drugs will be banned. Of course, they won't be banned by our Congress because the Congress, I don't know what the percentage is. I think it's pretty high given the mentality of Congress. Here's an article. Midlife suicide rises, puzzling researchers. It doesn't puzzle me. It's related to the medication. So they give an example of a 54-year-old political columnist who turned the motor on in carbon monoxide and took his breath and life away. And you read it, the wife says, I don't know why. He was struggling. And it says that he had just finished a new book, and it took a lot out of him. Wait, his medication was also taking a toll. Medication. Always medication. So it says, just why thousands of men and women have crossed the line between enduring life's burdens and surrendering to them is a painful question for their loved ones. Well, let's start with, because we're a nation of weaklings, where weakness is encouraged by the political structure in order to make you malleable, in order to make you a victim. You see what I'm saying? We're a weak nation. When you compare us to, let's say, the Chinese or the Russians, do you have any idea how weak we are as a people? Do you have any idea what we are as a people? How our children are raised, coddled, told that that life is a bowl of cherries and that there should be no hard knocks and that everything should be soft and easy for them? We're weak. We're a weak nation. Every minute is another pill. Every minute there's another schmuck on television, another expert. You take a look at the weakness of the West. That's exemplified by when somebody famous dies, what do the people do? They don't pray to God. They put teddy bears, balloons, and candy on the ground where the person died. What kind of nation? It's an infantile nation. I saw this trend begin with the death of Diana, the renegade princess, I call her. That's such a good title, right, by the way. Someone's going to rip it off in Hollywood. Darn, there it goes again. Another great idea from the lips of the master. You know, he married low. Prince Big Ears married outside. He married low. And look what happened to her. She was a whack job. She was doing everyone but the fire hydrant. Then to make matters worse, she wanted to marry the Muslim guy. I mean, I'm nothing against Muslim people. But if you're the royal family, you know well enough to not have a baby, you know, like outside the structure. They didn't want the first half Muslim child to be the king or whatever. So they knocked her off in the tunnel. That's what everyone figured out by now. I believe Dodi Al-Fayed's father is 100% right. I mean, that's how I see it. Calling whack job, calling bug eyes.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Lifetime, I'm really proud of my country.
And a federal grand jury in Detroit today charged the 13 top leaders of the Weathermen with plotting to bomb public buildings in Chicago, Detroit, New York, and Berkeley, California. The Weathermen are the militant faction of the Students for a Democratic Society. Only one of the 13 is now in custody.
Go to 16.
Hello. I'm going to read a declaration of a state of war. This is the first communication from the Weathermen Underground. Kids know the lines are drawn. Revolution is touching all of our lives. Freaks are revolutionaries, and revolutionaries are freaks. If you want to find us, this is where we are. In every tribe, commune, dormitory, farmhouse, barracks, and townhouse, where kids are making love, smoking dope, and loading guns, fugitives from American justice are free to go. Within the next 14 days, we will attack a symbol or institution of American injustice.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Terrorist group, the Weather Underground, of which one former member has donated money to the Obama campaign. Well, you can't make, he probably didn't know it. I mean, let's be realistic. There's plenty of other reasons to worry about him other than this connection. You know, that's the least of your problems. The biggest problem is that you don't know who he is. That's the biggest problem. He's a fantasy, so... Then we have the latest developments of the local talk show host, Bernard Ward, with the alleged transfer of child pornography. which we can talk about. We haven't really talked about it to any extent. It's been hushed up because he's a leftist. And as you know, the media loves, you know, leftists. They cover for Fidel Castro, Joseph Stalin. And consequently, they cover for even local mini-me, you know, types. Mini-Stalins. Mini-me-Stalins. So, you know what? I'm going to open it up to anything. Give me some rock and roll. Let's do... Oh, do you have The Great Pretender by The Platters? I heard it the other night. I really loved it over the weekend. I was in a very sad, depressed mood. I was alone. I go into these moods in and out. I admit it. I'm not ashamed of it. You know, it gets back to something. You got it. Look at that. Oh, the bouncing Prozac pill. Follow it along the bottom of the radio speaker, the bouncing Prozac pill.
I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
Ooh.
Adrift in a world of my own. I play the game, but to my real shame, you've left me to grieve all alone. Too real is
the great song, actually, to be honest with you. Anyway, turn it on. It's my own thing, but. So I'm getting into one of those moods, and I decide to have a couple of drinks by myself, which I did, and I had a couple of drinks, and, you know, the mood went away. But the thing I'm telling you is that life sucks, and once you accept that life sucks, it becomes easier to deal with. And that's why there's so much weakness in America, is because we're deluded into thinking that we're supposed to be happy, and everyone else is happy, and you're the only one who's feeling lonely, or you're feeling life's burdens and no one else, and you look at the ads every minute, there's a ha-ha and a ho-ho and a hee and it, and the media continuously drives this concept that everyone else is having a great time except you. You're the only one having a miserable time. But in fact, this is what life is. And a lot of it is the fact that you were raised, if you're a person under 45, you were probably raised in a Spockian, you know, nightmare where you were told that life is pleasant, life is easy, life is good. And maybe it is for you. You know, maybe you're a lucky person. You'd be the exception. You're not the norm. For most people, life is a grind, life is a bore, and life is difficult, and life sucks. And there is no happiness. Happiness is fleeting. Happiness is transient. Happiness exists here and there. You have moments of happiness, whatever they may be for you. I don't know what they are. The birth of a child, the wedding of your daughter. I don't know what the hell. Walking your child, seeing the kid in the graduation hat. Whatever it is, I don't know, getting a promotion, seeing a book published. There are small moments, but basically it's a flat line of difficulty for the average person. Then you get sick and you suffer, and then you die a horrible death, usually alone in a home or in a hospital. And once you accept that that's the terms, that's the deal, that's it. It isn't that bad when you realize what people have suffered through the ages. So what you have to do is toughen yourself up, and you have to learn that life is not the delusion that if only there was another elected official out there who gave you free medical care, if he gave you prescription drugs, you'd be happy if you had prescription drugs. If only you had more prescription drugs, more crutches from the government, then you'd be happy. Then you got to pray a lot. I mean, you got to go back to the holy books that your fathers or grandfathers, you're only probably, no matter who you are, let's say your hair is green and you got 18 nose rings and nipple rings and this ring and that ring, and you're running around in L.A. twinkling around thinking you're free, you're free, you're free. I don't hear freedom. I hear slavery. The more I hear those rings rattle, the more I know you're a slave. You're probably only two generations at most away from a very religious person in your family. Max, two generations. The most. Someone who actually believed in the Word of God and went to church or synagogue. And you may find that, you know, is the way to go. You know, what I found is that there's no single way to go in my own case. It doesn't work for you. It works for me. You got to do an awful lot of different things. Exercise, vitamins, eat right, know how to control yourself, know where to get your pleasure, know where not to get your pleasure. You got to pray. You got to believe in God. You know, everything is part of the whole. There's no single path for the modern man. There's no simple solution for it all. In other words, you just got to deal with life's burdens, or else what are you going to do? What are you going to kill yourself? So the government keeps promising you stuff they can't deliver. in order to hypnotize you like Obama and Hillary and Edwards. All they would do was hypnotizing the schmuck out there that George Bush is mean, the Republicans are evil, and if they're elected, they're going to make you happier because they're going to give you free prescription drugs. Well, okay, buddy, you believe in Santa Claus, you can believe in Obama or Hillary Clinton. So it is related to politics, what I'm saying to you. We're living in a delusional nation. Everything is fantasy. We all watch too much TV, too many movies. I myself do. I admit it. I don't know how much of what I how many things I, how many movies I've watched. If I could redo one thing in my life, I would never have watched movies or television in my life. I can't imagine life without it. I've been brainwashed since I'm a child. Remember, I'm born in the television age. Would you believe I go back to a time before there was television? Can you believe that? That's amazing. But I remember living in a time when there was no television in a house. There was only a radio. And we would sit around and listen to the radio. I'd lie on my father's lap. He'd smoke Philip Morris, God rest his soul. And we'd listen to shows like The Green Hornet and whatever. And you had to use your imagination. When you listen to radio as a child, this is why I'm so talented in radio, because I grew up on radio. Don't you understand there's a difference? It's not that there were people who are younger than me who can't do radio, but my father used to explain to me that radio was actually a better medium. He used to say to me, I like radio better. I said, why, Dad? Because you have to. He used to say to me, because you have to use your imagination. I said, oh, okay. So he taught me how to use my imagination. Not that it was too hard for me to do so. There was so much tragedy in my youth that I learned to live in a fantasy world. I created my own fantasy world in order to overcome the tragedy of my childhood. But that's good. That is good. That's what creative people do. They create with their sadness. They create with their misery. They don't succumb to a drug. Don't you understand that? That when you suppress sadness, when you suppress loneliness, when you keep suppressing these things with drugs, you're killing yourself. It's a small death. It's a petite mort. You know what I'm saying? Le petite mort. But it's not even the pleasure of the petite mort. Play the Green Hornet for the audience. They don't know what I'm talking about.
He hunts the biggest of all games. Public enemies who try to destroy our America.
Turn it off. This is horrible. Bad radio. What is this now? 1-800-449. Jesse Jackson warns of harm to parties. Look who's talking. A real halo. This just came out on Judge. Jesse Jackson warns of irreparable harm to party. Here's a guy who wrecked the Democrat Party with his racial divide and hatred and his bunko, him and the other one. Him and the other one with the white collar. No one knows where he went to divinity school. Jesse High Jackson. The Democrats. He's advising them how to run the party now. Oh, great. 1-800-419-8255. MichaelSavage.com. What do you want to talk about? Many of you don't know how to raise children. You need me to tell you. You do. Many of you don't have a parent. You don't have a father. You don't have an uncle. You have no one to rely upon. And you don't know what to do. You don't know how to turn. And I'm telling you that this coddling stuff, I'm not saying hit your kid. Don't get me wrong. I'm not giving you that advice. But you got to teach your child reality. And you got to teach your child that life is not a bowl of cherries. You got to teach them that life needs to be hard, that life is hard. Life is going to leave you alone a lot. You got to teach your child to be alone a lot. Did you know that? You know, you got to teach your child how to be alone a lot in order to be alone a lot, because he's going to be alone a lot when he grows up. Did you hear what I just said? We don't live in a commune. He's not going to live in Ding Dong School the rest of his life. Teach your child how to be alone. I remember when my first child was a baby. I didn't know how to raise an infant, so I turned to various cultures for advice. I mean, I was an anthropologist at the time, and I was immersing myself in Native American, everything I could read on the on tribal lore, I read South Pacific, this and that. But one of the things I read was how the Native Americans, some of the tribes, raised their young sons to be tough, basically. And when the young baby, if it was a boy baby, started to cry, they'd wrap the baby in a papoose and then put the papoose out on a tree outside the teepee until the baby screamed and cried till he didn't scream anymore. I read that. Now, of course, today the Child Protective Service is the ones that will not go to the home of a talk show host who imagined doing his own daughter and his son's friends, allegedly. The same CPS run by the hippopotamuses in Child Protective Services, the mean-faced, clipped-haired hippos who run these agencies, would, of course, arrest the Native American who did that today. But it was a pretty good idea. In other words, a child will cry and cry and cry till there's no crying left. And guess what? Then the child becomes hardened. He's harder as a result. Oh, he doesn't feel as much as you want him to feel. Oh, he doesn't know. He doesn't feel like you want him to feel. You want him to be a feeling man? You want him to be a metrosexual son? Maybe you don't want him to be a metrosexual son. Maybe if you raised your son a little bit more like that, and then you watched a few shows on the Spetsnaz training for the Russian Special Forces and see how tough these guys are compared to even our toughest of tough. In other words, what they do in the Special Forces in Russia to train their men, you couldn't do here in America. They consider what the Russian Special Forces do to each other makes waterboarding look like a picnic on Sunday. But don't tell that to Obama. What they do to each other in training, they punch each other in the nose. There are no teeth guards. There are no nose guards. They beat each other up. And if the guy can't handle it, they throw him out of the Russian Special Forces. Here, right away, Obama would break down the Marine training or the Special Forces training, saying it's a little too rough, okay? Now you understand where we're at? When we have Marines who actually are trained to hunt and kill and go out and hunt and kill like they've been trained to do as kids, and that's why they're tough enough to go into the U.S. Marines, and they do the job they were trained to do, what happens? Some puke wearing a uniform who's really a lawyer who's too stupid to get a job in civilian life goes after the kid who does his job. That's where I'm concerned about my country. I'll be right back. What a dumb nation. Americans feel better about the future of Reuters poll. You hear? Who writes these things? Play this music. Play it. I want to. That's all. That makes me feel better about the future. We're just thinking of the past. One more stanza. Don't you love radio? What a medium. What a medium. It's unbelievable. All these people driving around in cars, listening. What else do they got to do? They're going to play with a computer while driving a car? They're listening to me. Who are they going to listen to? Wolf Blitzer? All right, fine. They don't even know what I'm talking about. Half the time I go into these internal monologues, they don't know what I'm saying. I know that. But they think they should know. And I almost said this, and I think I got it, and I did, but that, who cares if he thinks? I know he likes it if I got female. I love when that thing says, you got male. I feel like I'm not alone when the computer talks to me. You've got female. Why don't they change it for guys for you've got female instead of you got male? I'm living in San Francisco, and the computer says, you've got male. I worry about that, you know? Houston, Texas. Trevin, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
It'll be initiation. Mr. Savage, I think a lot of what you've been speaking about kind of ties back to the disparity here in America on American men. I don't feel like a lot of males here that you really are initiated, or you find out whenever you become a male. I think with females, it's kind of nice because they go through puberty and then they get married. And both of those are kind of growing.
Absolutely.
Points.
As a man who studied anthropology for many years, male initiation is very important. Now, in the Jewish religion, there's the bar mitzvah, which is a kind of confirmation. In the Christian religion, isn't there confirmation? But it doesn't have the physical that a boy needs to feel like a man. You go to African tribes, for example, where a boy has to endure being beaten or whipped in front of the entire tribe. And if he winces or shows any pain, he's not considered a man. That's what you're talking about, isn't it?
That would be it. And one thing that I wanted to point out is we do see that, you know, with the American man, and I believe that does create a lot of problems that you see later on in life where men are going to be acting a lot more like younger boys and doing things that I don't think you would have.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's why we have a government taking advantage of the weakness of the American people, which is I'll give you prescription drugs and I'll take care of you and you're a victim and you need medication. Instead of saying, dummy up and straighten out and take care of yourself, and you're sick because you're living like a slob and half of the things you're imagining aren't even real. That's what the government ought to be saying, is learn to take care of yourself. Don't eat like a pig. Stop smoking. Cut down on your drinking. You know, walk around the block and stop asking us to help you. I guarantee you I can cure 50% of the ailments in America if I gave that message out on a regular basis. Up next is a guy who was raised the way I was, Pat Buchanan. I know he comes from the same time and place that I do. I'll be in a different realm. But we're going to talk about the elections and Kosovo and you, I don't know, the schoolyard.
Savage.
It is a Savage Nation. We've been talking about, you know, Obama, the invented candidate, promising the world. And when he's elected, he's going to save the world. And we're talking about the weak nature of the American people. All they want is the government to step in and help them. And, you know, self-esteem. Why should a child be given self-esteem if they're a loser? I'll never understand that. How do you give a child self-esteem by giving a loser false confidence? Confidence should be built upon something real. Anyway, right now we have with us Pat Buchanan. Pat, welcome to the Savage Nation. Pat, we were going to talk about Kosovo, but you are so immersed in the political world that I'd love to get your read on whether Hillary is finished or not. What do you think?
She's cooked unless there's some kind of celestial intervention. I think Obama...
Celestial, Pat. Now, come on. You're not into UFOs, are you?
That's what they said about Cal Coolidge. He said the only explanation for Cal Coolidge being president of the United States is an intervention of divine providence.
Well, wait. Aren't superdelegates the equivalent of UFOs?
Listen, superdelegates are pals, and I'll tell you, the pals, if Obama continues to win the pledge delegates and he continues to roll up a plurality or a majority of the popular vote, there's no way I think those superdelegates can step in and take the nomination away from him unless they want this thing to look like Newark in 1967, that Democratic convention, my friend.
I agree with you. No, I agree with you. And I want to ask your take on this. I have analyzed it from my perspective, which, as you know, is kind of unique and salty, to put it mildly. I said that there's a certain kind of perverse justice in this, in a certain way, which is Obama, you know, overtaking Hillary every way you turn. I said the Clintons complained for years that African-Americans were denied access to polling places, that there weren't enough polling places. So the Clintons, over many, many years, went about to make certain that as many African-Americans as they could find could vote. And consequently, they said, gee, thank you very much, and they said goodbye to her. I mean, is that how you're reading this? In other words, they open up all the polling places you can imagine in African-American communities, and the people are saying good, now goodbye. Is that what's happening here?
Well, it certainly is. What happened is that when it started off, Hillary was getting a good share of the African-American vote, as was Obama. But as he started to gain, African-American folks started to see, hey, this may be serious. He may be able to win this. And then Bill stepped in and said, well, Jesse Jackson won South Carolina. So what he has done is they have made Obama really the new Dr. King almost, and Hillary Clinton's share of the African-American vote is smaller than that of George Wallace. You know, what
wow.
Does me and Bill think of that?
Well, here's another element of it, Pat. The Republicans tried to pass the Real ID Voter Act or something like that to make sure that illegal aliens didn't vote or that there was not multiple voting by people who could vote. And Democrats, particularly the liberals, opposed the Real Voter ID Act, saying, how dare you be American like this? How dare you insist upon something as American as a real voter ID? So we also have the element of the illegal alien who is voting here in these Democrat primaries. Wouldn't you say that's a factor as well?
Yeah, I think it's certainly going to be, could be a factor in Texas. But I will say this, in Arizona, they had that famous Proposition 200. John McCain led the entire Republican delegation against it. But what it said was, before you get welfare and before you can vote, you're going to have to prove you're a citizen of the United States of America or you are in this country legally before you get welfare. That carried with 56% of the vote, and 47% of Hispanics in Arizona voted for it, and it is the law now, and it is a tough law, and that is exactly the law, kind of law you ought to have. But I agree with you. If you want to find out how illegal aliens vote, you can talk to former Congressman Bob Dornan.
Mm-hmm. Interesting you said that McCain actually opposed Prop 200. He voted for a continuance of the illegal aliens running rampant over the state of Arizona. Is that what you just said to us?
Yeah. John McCain.
Unbelievable. So how does McCain believe he's gonna electrify the conservative base? Suddenly he's discovered that Barry Goldwater was his natural political grandfather, and he's trying to walk in his shoes again. I don't think it's flying, do you?
No, I don't think it is flying. Look, Mike Huckabee got 40% in Virginia. I mean, he's basically out of the race. He got 40% in Virginia, 38% in Wisconsin. What that is that's conservatives and evangelical Christians and just plain Republicans saying, we don't want the guy that apparently is going to be our nominee. It is a real vote. That was a vote of no confidence in John McCain. It's a rejection of the putative nominee of the Republican Party. The way McCain thinks he's going to win is that he can lure some Hispanic voters because he was pro-amnesty, and he's been sort of on their side in that contest, and he can lure them away from Obama because there's more than a bit of a Hispanic African American split and sort of a mutual hostility, and certainly in places like L.A. He's hoping for that. He's hoping for the independents, and he's hoping the conservatives simply come out and vote, even if they don't love him, because he says, look, whatever you think of me, I'll give you a good deal more than Obama will. And then what he's betting on, Michael, is this. The Republican machine, the opposition research machine, if it's any good, it ought to be able to take Obama apart. He's got a voting record, which the National Journal said was the most liberal in the Senate of the United States, which puts him to the left of Bernie Sanders, the socialist. Now, if you can't find something in there, or a lot in there, and a lot in those votes in the Chicago or the Illinois legislature, to really define this fella after he finishes off Hillary, which I expect him to do, frankly, by Texas and Ohio as of right now, you got 6 months to define him before he gets to his convention. And
yeah, I've looked at his Senate career, and he's really on the far left of virtually everything. But he is sort of the created candidate in the sense that nobody really knows who this man is. How does he rise from obscurity with only 2 years in the Senate to creating such mass hysteria? Why is this happening? Where is the mass hysteria coming from, Pat?
Well, the hysteria is coming from a number of places. One, the liberal wing of the Democratic Party, the left wing of the Democratic Party, is an emotional wing. And you promise change, you promise it's all going to be better. I mean, you can go back into the it's sort of like a religious enthusiasm. And that's what he's caught, and he's created a wave. And what he has done, he's taken the more pure positions in the Democratic Party. For example, he was against the war originally. He's always been against it, and she's been, she's been back and forth on supporting the war. And so what he's got is two things going for him. He's captured the McGovern wing of the Democratic Party, which is where the left, where the energy and fire and ideology are, and he's married to it. The Jesse Jackson wing, if you will, the African-American vote, and he's put the two together. It's a combination of McGovern and Jesse Jackson's vote, and he's a far better candidate in terms of horse flesh. I mean, the ability to speak and I can look at candidates. Some of them, you take a...
No, I agree with you. He's not offensive the way Jesse Jackson was always grating. I mean, Jesse Jackson always turned people off with his hateful rhetoric and his mumbo jumbo. But Obama doesn't do that. He's a literate man, and he's appealing for that regard, but he's a far left candidate. So here's the point, Pat. I get calls all the time now from mainstream media people saying, is talk radio finished? Have you lost your influence? And I say, no, the contrary is true. And they say, well, why? I said, well, 14 million came out in the main primaries for Democrats. 8 million came out for the Republicans. They said, well, what does that tell you? I said, it tells me that talk radio did not tell the people we had a candidate. We didn't excite them to go out to vote. They themselves said we don't want to vote. And unless McCain stops playing the middle, and unless McCain starts coming around to places like the Savage Nation, my prediction is he'll lose.
I think because he just is in terms of a pure candidate, take away philosophy and everything. As a pure candidate, Obama's a far more attractive candidate. He speaks well.
Yes.
He's young. He moves gracefully. He's articulate. He's got a warm sense of humor. You don't sense any meanness in the guy. And McCain looks like the quintessential angry old man up there.
Stop it. But Cindy's an asset. But isn't Cindy an asset for him?
Angry Grandpa John up here.
No, it must be very hard on Cindy. She has to sit with that fixed smile. She's a lovely person, and so is I don't know. I would think that today, let's strip bare, Pat, for the moment, the whole hysteria of the Obama moment. I call them Obamaniacs, because to me it looks like a concert, almost a revival meeting, an intent of people. They're ready to hold up the snakes and drink the strychnine when he appears. You know, all they need is the equivalent of the left-wing snake and the strychnine, and I don't know what that is. It's like a Jim Jones. The guy is like a Jim Jones. But he isn't a Jim Jones. He's running on the candidacy of change and of saving America, which we all know is hype. If the election were held today and it was between John McCain and Obama, between you and I, wouldn't the white male who really hasn't voted in a long time come out to make sure Obama doesn't win, strictly on racial grounds? I mean, I know one wants to talk about it, but don't you think that's going to happen?
South of Fredericksburg, Virginia, and all the way to the New Mexico border, you're right. You notice in those regions that Obama, for example, in the South Carolina primary, he got 24% of the white vote, 24%. I mean, those folks down there in the South, very much the parties have turned into pretty much a black-dominated party and a white party in a presidential election, and the Republicans are the white party in the presidential election. But once you get north of there, as of right now, Obama is doing pretty well. He's gotten into Hillary's white male vote. But I do agree with you, after a campaign, if you had a straight Republican, straight middle-of-the-road Republican conservative, and Obama, the white male vote and I think the white female vote would both go very, very strongly for the Republican, and he would win the election. I think that's
right.
Exactly right. But you've got these added factors that you mentioned now, all the hype, and Obama right now is, you know, he's a very fresh, clean, attractive young man. This is 6 months before the convention, though. A lot
yes.
of work can be done.
Yes. And of course, it's McCain's to lose. If he continues to run to the middle, and if he continues to avoid the core base, and he continues to avoid exciting the core base, he has a real problem on his hands, and that's not good for America. You know, people have asked me, where do I stand? I said, first of all, I'm not a McCain hater. Let me be very clear about that. I have not painted myself into a corner. I think with McCain, I'd get 65% on the dollar in terms of conservatism. With Obama, I'm going to get less than probably minus 25, okay? With Hillary, it might be a plus 10, a plus 15. She's certainly not as extremist as him, which to me, I hope Obama beats Hillary, because I think he's an easier candidate for McCain to beat than Hillary is. If you were to match up McCain versus Obama or McCain versus Hillary, would you agree that it's McCain versus Hillary is a tougher fight for McCain?
I certainly do. I'm one of the few on the on that network where I'm on that believes that. But I think Obama can be easily defined because it is who and what he is. He is a McGovernite. He's a man of the left. He's got all these gauzy ideas of you know, he's taking us back to the New Deal. You think America's
yes.
laden as robles the way he's
yeah,
defined.
No, 100%. I agree 1,000%. It's a combination of the rhetoric of FDR, JFK, and McGovern. More on the McGovern side than any of the others. Absolutely, big government socialism. Government's going to help you from cradle to grave and then some. And it's fantasy.
It is indeed. And listen, if these fellows calling you up and asking about talk show hosts to have any influence, ask them who thumped the entire national establishment on that amnesty bill that McCain and Kennedy and Bush and Hillary and the Wall Street Journal and Washington Post and everybody was behind except the people. And it was the first major defeat that I've seen the establishment receive in 20 years. I mean, we fought.
Well, Pat, for the first time, I'm going to disagree with you today. We beat them on amnesty, but a year before that, we derailed the Dubai ports deal.
Exactly.
We did it on this show. I had people emailing and faxing and phoning. We did it. I was told by congressmen who came on this show that it was this show that did it and other shows. Then the amnesty deal, but we had another victory today. The 3Com deal just went up in smoke. Did you see that yet?
Not see that. 3Com
yeah,
went
they
up?
Could. Yes, they withdrew it from CFIUS. They don't even want to put it before CFIUS. They said that government officials, I just threw the story out, government officials, so-called, were concerned about national security issues. I was very pleased to hear that we even have government officials who are still concerned about national security issues. But that deal just went up in smoke, Pat. That's a biggie. That's a huge deal.
That's a big one. I guess they felt they couldn't get the 3Com thing. They would really get rejection because you are dealing with national security stuff. But let me tell you how McCain, the tragedy here is McCain could beat Obama. The strongest issue now, social, cultural issue going, is immigration. If he took the conservative line on that build the border fence, No amnesty. We're going after these folks that hire illegal aliens. And if you have a baby in the United States simply because you made it across the border, that is not an automatic citizen. He could win. McCain
yes.
could win. And then if he would yes. go after these trade deals, that
yes.
you know, NAFTA, GATT, the WTO,
yes. Yes.
And go after them tough, and the word NAFTA, I'll tell you who's picking it up, is Obama. He's up there leveling NAFTA.
I saw him in Ohio. He was saying what a Republican ought to be saying.
Exactly, and the Republicans are all going back to this same old free trade. They've learned nothing and forgotten nothing in 20 years.
Pat, you're 100%, you're a great teacher on this. I'm in favor of tariffs on certain foreign goods before they eat us alive even further. We'll have no industries left whatsoever. Again, Pat Buchanan is really, I would say, the master of us all in this world that we live in. And I do take my hat off to you, Pat. You've been around long enough to have seen it all. Would you say this election is as seminal as everyone thinks it is going to be? And if so, why? Can you hold on and come back with that answer right here on the Savage Nation?
Sure.
Right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
From a green room somewhere in Washington, D.C., we go back to Pat Buchanan, who's been given a few minutes off. Pat, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, sir.
You've been living in green rooms. I mean, they don't let you alone with the television commentary. I see you all the time now.
Well, you're watching that network, Michael.
I know. I watch all the networks at once. I can't resist the Viagra ads at 15 minutes after the hour. Hey, Pat, is this election as important as the hype? And if so, why?
I think it will be important if Obama wins, for the reason I think you really will move to a new generation, and that will be an American vote to take a sharp turn to the left. America might not know it's taken it, but it will be taking a sharp turn to the left.
Why is it the media again covering the fact that this man is a far left revolutionary? His rhetoric is that of a revolutionary on the left.
It is. Look, his positions are on the left. His voting record is on the left. His rhetoric is on the left. And the failure so far, but of course I don't blame the Republicans, the failure so far is Hillary Clinton's not to define him over there, and she's doing that, or failing to do that, for the reason that she wants those votes, and she fears if she goes after him very hard, she could damage herself for the general. But I predict between now and Texas, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, the Clintons are going to have to really start unloading on Obama as someone who is not equipped by ideas or ideology to be president of the United States or experience.
Yes, but she has to distinguish the difference between Obama and herself on very serious issues. Unfortunately, there may not be that big a difference on immigration. They're almost twins on that. Where do they really differ? Sure, I agree with you. She should say, I'm a centrist and he's a leftist and he's dangerous and here's why. But, of course, she'll alienate the core base of the Democrat Party, just as McCain should say, I'm really a hardcore conservative, and here's why. Both of them are making a mistake by trying to appeal to all men on all issues, and it's not working.
Here's the thing. In a way, McCain has gotten past his primary problem. And what he's going to count on now is the conservatives basically will have to come home or face the prospect of Hillary or, more likely, Obama, and he thinks that will bring him home. Now, Hillary has not gotten by yet. Hillary is, matter of fact, slipping, and she's not going to make it to the nomination, so she's going to have to do what McCain didn't have to do, which was really go after some conservative to paint him outside the mainstream. And frankly, if he had tried to do that, he would have sunk himself. So he's made it through, but she hasn't. And if she goes after him, for example, if she says, look, your view on the war, I think we got to move out of Iraq, but responsibly, and you will hand that thing over to the extremists and the terrorists, the liberal wing of the Democratic Party will tear her apart. So she's inhibited from doing
yes.
a lot of things that Republicans will be free to do because, as I've said on television many times, Republicans cannot get Obama's vote. It's McGovern, it's Jesse Jackson. We never get
it. We're just frankly out of time. But, Pat Buchanan, your article on Kosovo that I read on WorldNet Daily and I posted on michaelsavage.com is a must-read for anybody who wants to know what it is to steal a nation right before the eyes of the world. Pat Buchanan, thank you very much for being with us today.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Event poses a challenge and an opportunity. Will the next president have the experience, the judgment experience informs, and the strength of purpose to respond to each of these developments in ways that strengthen our security?
I can't even listen to him. So now the New York Times is going to run a hit piece on him tomorrow, Jim Rutenberg, digging up dirt that he was too close to a female lobbyist tomorrow, and he flew with her on a board of a client's corporate jet. Big deal. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I didn't know the old goat had it in him. I'm actually impressed. But when was this? If it was recent, I'd be more impressed. Is this old news or new? The New York Times says he was too close to a female lobbyist. Mr. McCain, 71, and the lobbyist Vicky Eisenman, 40. Both say they never had a romantic relationship, but that doesn't stop Pinchy Sulzberger from being smitten with jealousy that somebody may have had a romantic relationship other than him. And so they're trying to smear McCain and imply that although she was that because she was a lobbyist, he somehow was. What do I know here? To me, it's to his advantage. The old goat can still get it on. Good for him. I mean, what do you want from the guy? And they say, well, he's an ethical guy, guys are saying, but he tends to be impudent at times. He's a former fighter pilot. That's how fighter pilots and drummers are, by the way. If you know anything about fighter pilots and drummers? That's how they become fighter pilots or drummers. They're rather impudent. Maybe we need a little impudence from time to time in these organization, men. For God's sakes, give the guy a breath of air here. That's the biggest thing they can dig up on him, is that he was friendly with a female lobbyist, and he flew on a private jet with a – ooh! In the year 2008, he flew on a private jet with a female lobbyist. With what goes on in this country, it's amazing to me that that's how low the New York Times is going to go tomorrow. That's why I figured I'd deal with it tonight. You know, a drive to expunge the stain on his reputation? Well, please, come on. What stain? Oh, the Keating is another story. He is essentially an honorable person. So William Cheshire, a friend of McCain, who was editor of page of the Arizona Republic, defended him during the Keating 5 scandal. But he can be impudent. Imprudent, sorry, not impudent. Imprudent. Imprudent. That means not a prude. That's good. I don't want to prude for a president. I'm glad he's imprudent. I thought he said impudent, not impotent, because it's not Bob Dole with the Viagra. I mean, if he can be impotent. That would be Bob Dole. He could be impudent, impotent, and imprudent are three different words. I hope he's using the right word when he says he can be imprudent. I hope he doesn't mean the other two or one of the other two. Cheshire added that imprudence or recklessness may be part of why he was not more astute about the risks he was running with this shady operator, Charles Keating. Leave the Keating thing already. Forget about it. I'd like to know more about who was funding Obama than about the Keating 5. All right, tell me who's funding Obama, where the billions are coming from. That's all. I need a break from all of this. I don't know about you. I've had enough. 1-800-449-8255, phone number, michaelsavage.com website. Radio show bigger than ever. Influence never greater. Listenership never more loyal. So if you want to talk about any of these topics, I realize that you are listening. America's most sinful cities, mayor's climate aid. We're going to dump that story. We're dropping the story on mayor's climate aid gets $160,000 a year. That's what we expect from any Twosome Newsome. But the story that just came out about the Pentagon, about to shoot down the satellite that's going to fall down, is a great story. Because there's a new map came out that I like those diagrams. They show they're firing it from a missile ship in the Pacific. And that's good that we're going to finally use one of our ships for something other than a port visit is very impressive to me. I mean, we have a Navy. I don't know what it does anymore. We go to the Straits of Hormuz and a rubber boat scares the admiral out of his skirts. Ooh, a rubber boat.
fire until you can see the eyes of their burqa.
So we're actually going to use a missile cruiser to shoot down a satellite, and all the leftists around the world are screaming, don't you dare shoot down a satellite. I love it. Concerned scientists of America are saying, don't shoot down the satellite that's about to fall down on the Earth. Well, no, why don't you just ask some of the bearded scientists to throw a Birkenstock at the satellite, and maybe they can bring it down by what if there was a collective mass throwing of Birkenstocks from Berkeley at the satellite? Maybe that would bring it down so it doesn't crash and kill people. What a bunch of maniacs. Don't shoot down the satellite that's about to fall down. Unbelievable to me. Dying and potentially deadly U.S. spy satellite using a souped-up missile fired from a ship in the Pacific. Great story. I hope we hit it. And if we don't, well, then it means that all the trillions of dollars we spent were for nothing. Timing was tricky. The military awaited a combination, favorable factors, steady seas around the Navy cruiser. This is right up my alley. I love the words seas and steady and cruiser and Navy. Yes, indeed. As a boater, I love these kinds of stories. The plan was for the SM-3 to soar 130 miles to just beyond the edge of the Earth's atmosphere and attempt to speed its non-explosive warhead directly into the satellite. That is so good. The USS Lake Erie, high seas in the North Pacific, posed the first obstacle as the USS Lake Erie prepared to launch a three-stage missile. This is so beautiful. I am so happy. I am so happy we're about to do this. They don't just want to hit the bus-sized satellite, the size of a bus. It's going to burn up upon reentering the atmosphere anyway. You understand how these things work, right? You understand how this works? In other words, when the satellite enters the atmosphere, it burns up. So you ask yourself, so why are they shooting at it? Because there's a tank on board that is carrying 1,000 pounds of hydrazine, a toxic fuel. And the reason the fuel is still there is because the satellite died shortly after reaching orbit in December of 06. And the hydrazine could be hazardous if it fell down into a populated area. You understand that? So that's one of the reasons that the U.S. government through the Navy is trying to shoot down the satellite and burn up the hydrazine in the above the atmosphere. Wow, there's going to be some collectors out there trying to get the satellite debris. I hope a little bit of it falls down around here. I really do. I mean, not to hurt anybody. I'd like to get some of that. That would be, like, worth a lot, wouldn't it, to get satellite debris? 1-800-449-82. We're going to hear crazy things now about UFOs. Everybody, you know, everybody sees UFOs everywhere. So what would you like to talk about on the Savage Nation? Because coming up, I have a story about Islamists in the schools in the United States of America. While you slept, while Obama hypnotized you because he's a snake charmer, and McCain apparently doesn't hypnotize people, he just drones on and doesn't really excite anybody. We are all concerned about the Islamic movements inside America and the Islamist movement within the Islamic community, which is very, very, very worrisome to people inside the government spy agencies. They know what's going on, but the politicians are too timid to warn the people as to the danger they are in. If you want to read a little bit more about it, please go to michaelsavage.com and see the lawsuit that I have initiated against one of these dangerous front groups, in my opinion, CAIR, who today threatened to sue another website, by the way, not mine, for merely mentioning something that they found to be unfavorable. And if you think that CARE is not a fascist group, you're crazy. And if you think it's only about Michael Savage, you're really silly. And if you think that a new prayer tower in St. Louis with speakers is something to look forward to, you're crazier yet. I'll be right back. Be here or be nowhere. Savage. The Islamic haters called Islamists are infiltrating Europe, they're infiltrating our government, and now they're infiltrating American schools. Cinnamon Stillwell with CampusWatch.org has written an expose of how some schools are glorifying not Islamic, but Islamist beliefs in textbooks, read by your children. Cinnamon, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks so much for having me on again.
Our schools are starting to get textbooks promoting the overthrow of America, meaning glorifying Islamic nationalism?
Well, this has actually been going on since about the 1990s, and some call it the Islamization of textbooks and of public education began. And what you see is this sort of creeping curriculum
course, there has to be some complaining going on. What is being said about these so-called books?
The main complaints about these textbooks is that they are presenting inaccurate and falsified, in many cases, history. And in the course of that falsification, what they're doing is glorifying Islamic history and beliefs and sometimes distorting them, for instance, softening up certain concepts like jihad. The particular textbook in question right now, it's called History Alive, The Medieval World and Beyond, and it's a textbook published by the Teachers Curriculum Institute, which is a California-based outfit, and they have a whole curriculum based on this kind of bringing history alive approach to teaching, and their books have caused a lot of controversy. This particular book was used in the Scottsdale, Arizona school district and was removed in 2005 because parents started complaining Islamic history is being glorified and falsified, and other religions and cultures are being downgraded. Also, that there's the idea of separation, in this case, of mosque and state, where, you know, you have people going around looking for the smallest instance of Christianity, usually is what they focus on, being introduced in the public sphere and in public schools. And you know if there was some kind of a classroom exercise involving specific Christian tenets or beliefs, the ACLU would be up in arms. But in this case, you have blatantly religious teachings of an Islamic nature being introduced into classrooms and also questionable exercises. This involved a different textbook a couple of years ago, but there were some classroom exercises where they were separating the children into fictional groups that were supposed to represent the Palestinians and the Israelis to try to show them what it was like to allegedly be oppressed by the Israeli group. This is also the introduction of politics, you know, of a particular ideological bent into children.
Who is responsible for these books getting into our schools?
I noticed that a Cal State Sacramento sociology professor who specializes in Middle East studies, Ayad Al-Kazaz, is a contributor to the textbook and one of the gatekeepers who's charged with approving it for use in California's public middle school in league with the California Board of Education. So what you have is a case of, as I see it, the fox guarding the hen house.
What do you know about this weird professor, Ayad Al-Kazaz?
There's a group called the American Textbook Council, which has done a lot of work on Islam and the textbooks. From their report on History Alive, they focus particularly on Al-Kazaz, who they note is a frequent speaker in Northern California school districts, quote, promoting Islam and Arab causes. There was also a parent quoted who was very concerned about her child using this textbook, and it turns out she had been a student in one of Al-Kazaz's Middle East studies courses, and that was where her concern stemmed from because she perceived a certain ideological bias. I wrote about him last year, at least at the time. This was April 2007. He was president of the Middle East Cultural Association at Cal State University, Sacramento, and he produced a television show for a local access channel in Sacramento called Focus on the Middle East. And basically his politics, he's an Iraqi native and has been here since the late 60s, I believe. His politics are very left-leaning. I wouldn't call him an Islamist by any means, but a left-leaning apologist sort of type whose interest it is, it seems, to sort of downplay the more radical elements in Islam. And, you know, to give you an idea of his politics, one of the guests on his Sacramento TV show was Lynn Stewart, the radical leftist attorney, you know, who's convicted of aiding a terrorist organization and who still goes around, you know, claiming that she was a political prisoner of some sort. I also found some older interviews with him about the war in Iraq, which he's opposed to, which, you know, that's fine, as various people are, but he gets into some rather conspiratorial thinking along those lines. In fact, there was an interview with him from 1990 about the first Gulf War, in which he claimed that Israel was somehow behind the war, even though Saddam Hussein had invaded Kuwait. This is the man who is involved with, you know, contributing to our children's textbooks and to approving it for use. He has a history of sort of presenting the softened-up version of that. As he put it in a 2003 TV interview, he says, there are two levels of jihad. The greater jihad is every Muslim's quest to live out their faith in their daily lives. The lesser jihad means to protect one's people and fight against enemies. When you have professors who are contributing and approving textbooks for children, presenting the softened up version of jihad. It's definitely troubling.
I can imagine this is already a nationwide problem. What can we do, and why don't we hear more about these so-called books of hatred?
That's a good question. I think this is definitely an issue whose time has come. I got a huge reaction to this article, and I heard from a lot of parents in California and beyond. What you're mostly seeing right now is a kind of grassroots effort, and it's on the part of parents. And I do think, I mean, sure, we would all like to be supported by our, you know, various institutions and members of the government and such in these efforts, but I think it is up to the individuals, you know, who are personally affected to take the reins. One of the things that parents and anybody trying to fight this issue are going to run into is political correctness. You know, there are those who don't want to jump on the bandwagon and condemning these textbooks because they're afraid that they will be called racists or Islamophobes, you know, the typical labels that are thrown out there that basically have the effect of silencing people.
What about the publishers? Is there any questionable funding going on here to push this hateful agenda?
The publisher of History Alive is called the Teachers Curriculum Institute, and they don't have any sort of shady funding that I'm aware of. But there's another organization called the Council on Islamic Education, which is located in Southern California, and they basically, what they do is lobby publishers to present the kind of viewpoints they want in their textbooks. And there are at least questions surrounding if they have any foreign funding. And obviously, you know, what comes to mind in these cases is the possibility of Saudi Wahhabi funding, because Saudi Arabia still is the sort of center of funding for this kind of ideological infiltration campaign in all aspects of our society. And they've been doing this since the 1990s in K-12, and just people are becoming more aware of it now. So I hope that this sort of grassroots effort on the part of parents and others who are concerned in the community will continue and will gather steam, and at a certain point the public education system as a whole will have to sort of look at this and deal with these complaints and these problems, because it's not going to go away. It's definitely an issue whose time has come.
Cinnamon Stillwell, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks so much, Michael.
Savage.
Dina Razor has co-written an awfully important book with Robert Bauman. It's called Betraying Our Troops, The Destructive Results of Privatizing War. She's agreed to come answer some of my questions. Dina, hello.
Thanks for having me on, Michael. I look forward to talking to you.
Our troops seem to be severely underfunded. We continue to hear Bush ask us for more money for our troops, yet the government is spending many of those billions on private contracts. But that money is often misappropriated as well. What can you tell us about this black hole our tax dollars disappear into when we think they're going for the war?
It doesn't seem to matter how much money the Congress throws at this war. We constantly hear soldiers doing without body armor, ammunition, up-armored Humvees, the kinds of things they need to fight. When this war first started, the money that was given to the Pentagon was considered colorless money. You appropriate it where you need it for this war. But because the contractor billings, how much the contractors are billing us, have become so out of control with so little oversight, they suck the money from all areas. So as a result, even though this is the most expensive war in history, we keep spending more and more money, and people can't understand. How can it be our soldiers are doing without? And the bottom line is the contractor billings. They are running up the costs, and what they do is run up the cost on the first contract. That becomes the new normal. Then they turn around, and when we have a follow-on contract or follow-on task order, they run that up. That becomes the new base. So there is an enormous amount of fat and fraud built in. Till we get control of the contractor's billings, there'll never be enough money for this war for anything.
Every single week, it seems the president is pressuring Congress for more and more money for our troops. Please fund the troops. This is something we need for the troops. Help protect our troops. This money is not going to the troops. It's going to contractors. Are they lying to us?
Well, that's one of the reasons that I wrote this book, is my extreme frustration that they use this fund the troops kind of rhetoric. The generals and everyone else in this war have stuck themselves like glue to the troops. But the troops were coming back, and they were starting to email me and tell me, even when they were in Iraq, we can't get the contractors to get us the kind of food and water we need as soon as we leave a base. KBR was, according to their task order, was supposed to supply food and water to everyone who was within 400 kilometers of major bases. And yet, what I found is if you weren't near one of these big bases, you went without. You didn't have enough food, water, supplies, because KBR just refused to go out. It was too dangerous. For example, in our book, they had to scrounge for food and drink their shower water, and it was just a shameful situation. This is one of the Achilles heel problems of having contractors. And that is, contractors can just say no. They just basically say, we're not doing that task, it's too dangerous. And the only recourse, the commander or whoever is trying to oversee them or whoever needs the supplies has, is to go back to the U.S. and start a breach of contract.
Now, I want to go into how their employees are treated. KBR, among others, have many employees who come home injured before they make $50,000. In many cases, these employees are also neglected by their companies once they're back home in the U.S. Their insurance claims are either neglected or simply denied. So this money for the troops, but actually being spent on contractors, is eaten up by these companies before the contractors are even taken care of.
Yeah, but you know what they do is they tell you, oh, you go there, you get this money tax-free, they promise you all this stuff. But unless you're there for 360-some days, it isn't tax-free. And what I found is two things. One, people get injured, and then they just send you home and leave you. The second thing is that you start saying, hey, you know, we're not feeding the soldiers like we're supposed to, or we're not doing this for the soldiers, and we are supposed to be doing this. And because a lot of these guys are retired military, are saying, you know, I got to do this for the troops. And they can just fire you and send you home. And then suddenly, if you make noise, if you as an employee make noise and make trouble, you sent home before that time, you have to pay taxes. One of the truck drivers in our book who made a stink because things weren't right and things weren't fair, they sent him home, and he had to pay another $15,000 in taxes.
In the book, you talk about the KBR Houston orientation before the war began. They had an emphasis on the money. They said, quote, this is the easiest money you'll ever make, close quote. If you get frustrated, just remember the money. Remember, we are a for-profit group. Wow.
Yeah, well, that was probably the most astounding story I heard when I first started, is this kind of PR thing where you at least mask it or put on some pseudo-patriotism, not KBR. And the truck drivers told me they were just amazed. First of all, they were at a five-star hotel, which, of course, is taxpayer-paid. But the second of all is that they had them chant over and over again in these motivational speakers. They said, you're not going to Iraq to help the American soldiers. You're not going to Iraq for America. You're not going to Iraq for this. You're not going to Iraq for that. You're going to Iraq to make money. You're going to make lots of money. That's what we're here for. We're here to make money. That's our goal. And then they'd have them chant, for the money, for the money. And I would think that they would try to, like, sugarcoat it a little. You know, like, you know, maybe say we're going to help our soldiers and we're true blue Americans. No, they didn't want them to. I guess they realized that once it got nasty there, that a lot of the patriotic feelings would probably disappear. And they wanted these guys to feel like you're going to, you know, it's worth driving a truck with minimal army protection and no gun in case somebody comes to try to shoot you because you're going to have a big paycheck and your wife's going to be really happy. But one of the things that happened that blew a lot of that out, a lot of that orientation out of the system, was when Tommy Hamill, the KBR truck driver, got kidnapped. If everybody remembers, he was, you know, in a car and they had a gun to his head and all that kind of stuff. Well, what happened there, and that was early on in the war, well, a lot of these American truck drivers quit and came home. I'm sure their wives got on the phone and said, get out of there. And that is one of the problems with using contractors instead of using military truck drivers. Just quit and leave. And they did. And they didn't have enough truck drivers. And there was 1,000 trucks stuck on the Kuwaiti borders and people not willing to drive and not willing to go in. And they had the Army had to start rationing food and everything else. You cannot put your supply chain, your vital trucking supply chain, in the hands of a private contractor with employees who can quit.
But this used to be something the military did within its own means.
Absolutely. The military truck drivers used to do this. The military truck drivers, one, knew how to drive in hostile areas. They were trained. Number two, they had a gun. And number three, they couldn't just say, I'm going home, because they were under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. They said, you know, Sarge, it's too dangerous to drive over that hill. I really don't want to do that. And the sergeant said, well, you either drive over the hill or you go to jail.
Fundamentally, there seems to be a problem here, because under U.S. law, these companies are required to turn a profit for their stockholders. So unequivocally, money is their number one priority, not our safety, not our country, not winning the war.
Right. Well, here's the problem. The problem is that you're right. According to the stockholders and the law, they're supposed to be maximizing the profits for the stockholders. You know, you could bring a stockholder suit if they didn't. And the bottom line is that is incompatible with the battlefield. It's incompatible because the battlefield situation has, in the military situation, has a very different goal, and that is do everything against your self-interest to defeat the enemy. And that's why you have the Uniform Code of Military Justice, by the way, because you're asking people to do things against their own self-interest in order to win. Now, as far as the billings are concerned, this is one of the things I'm talking about. They would just, KBR was telling their employees to bill 84 hours a week no matter what. And what happened is everybody was billing 84 hours a week, and some people were working that and some people weren't. And so as a result, these billings are huge, because you got to think about this. This, you know, KBR is reported to be billing $500 million a month. And that's breathtaking. But think about it. They don't have a big plant, a manufacturing plant. They're not buying titanium and exotic metals to bend metal and make a fighter jet. They don't have a big, huge retirement fund. They don't have any of this stuff that normally sucks up money. They are basically a service industry. The majority of money is going towards salaries and wages. And so as a result, they're marking, if for every hour some guy works 84 hours, they mark up on overhead, you know, all the different things they layer on. And this is how you get up to $500 million a month. And this is how you get up to, this war is going to end up being one of the most expensive in constant dollars. And there was recently a report that came out of the Center for Public Integrity. From 2004 to 2006, the contractor amounts have gone up 50% a year.
Okay, so we know there is very little oversight for these companies operating in Iraq. And when we try to attempt enforcement tactics, the supervisors come back to us with their finger in their nose saying they don't know what to oversee. This is our first time. We've never done this before. We don't know what to look for. Why, in your opinion, is this happening?
Well, and that's part of the problem. Part of the problem is that a lot of this stuff is done in a hostile area, and you can't have a lot of oversight people just hanging around in a hostile area. And so, as a result, you got these cost-plus contracts, which are known in the Pentagon as rob-me contracts. And you don't have anybody sitting over them and enough auditors, investigators overseeing it, because it's a war situation. So as a result, they're taking advantage of it. They're telling, the companies are billing, and they're telling the government, pay this, pay this, pay this. They're not definitizing the contract. They're not saying, these are our set costs, this is how much it's going to be, or this is it. It's just like an open faucet. And so as a result, the billings are huge. And one of the things that we have, even the very first story in our book, in our introduction, is that KBR was billing so much that their bills got way out there, and it took, the government was trying to scrub the numbers, and the government was saying, we can't directly pay you because your billings are so outrageous, we got to look at these. And so the government was slow to pay. So KBR started, in the middle of battlefield situation, they started going in a revolving way, not a one-time thing. They started saying to the generals of these bases, call Washington and get us paid, because if you don't get us paid, our guys aren't coming out of the trailer. And a work stoppage in a war situation. Now, legally, they had a right to do that. That's the ironic thing, because these procurement rules were not built for contractors to be in a war. They were built for the nice, calm, you know, daily contracting kind of thing. And so as a result, you have work stoppages. And what my biggest disappointment in this whole thing is that apparently all these generals caved and didn't report this and didn't push back, and the civilians in the army caved and paid this money. They can't afford it. But what I don't understand is why in the heck wouldn't they have gone to the top levels of the Pentagon and say, if you don't do something about this and get these companies under control for us, we're going to go to the Congress. It was a Republican Congress. They could have gone to them and saying, we're being blackmailed by the companies. Now, how well do you think that would go over? Or one of them resign and protest and go to the press. Can you imagine the uproar against KBR if they knew that they were trying to blackmail, not feeding the soldiers because they weren't being paid in the middle of a war? It's really sad. And my website is www.followthemoneyproject.org.
Dina Razor, unbelievable. Thank you for being with the Savage Nation today. The book is Betraying Our Troops.
Thanks for having me on, Michael. I really appreciate it. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. You can ask me any question you want now that we're in the final boarding phase of the third hour of this show. And the Oscars are going to be the lowest, in my opinion, what's coming for Sunday will be the lowest viewership in history and the most anger, because I just read that they're going to feature three anti-American, anti-war documentaries by three skunks. And they just don't understand it in Hollywood, do they? That America hates them. They keep making these garbage anti-American, anti-military movies. They never criticize radical Islam. They never show the torture. They never show the oppression of children and women. They never show the retrograde throwbacks for what they are. Instead, they attack our troops. And so I hope that eventually the Oscars diminish to the point of no return. It's nothing but a trade show anyway. It began as a trade show by generations past actors who wanted to drum up interest in movies as art. And so they put together a trade show, much like the sanitation districts would have a meeting, let's say, an industry-wide meeting where they show a new truck and how to load garbage and have a magazine, you know, Sanitation and You. Or pipe fitters or toaster manufacturers, the toaster convention in Las Vegas. That's what the Academy Awards really are. The American people still think they're important. They usually hire failed comedians to tell stale jokes. And that's it. Don't think it's jealousy. I don't want to go there. I don't want to be there. Don't you understand? I don't care about those things. It's easy to say, oh, it's just sour grapes. He wants to be there. I don't want to be there. Honest to God, I'd rather be where I'm going to be. I think I'm going to be in the snow this weekend. I missed the snow terribly. I told you my latitude is too low for a kid who grew up in New York. I miss the heavy snow, so I make up to Tahoe for the first time this year and you know, really enjoy the snow drifts and take more pictures for my website. The shadows, the light, the pine trees. I can't wait to see it. It's been a long time. So I'm not even going to watch the Oscars. Amanajad, the Hitler of our time, says Israel is filthy bacteria. You hear this? And Israel doesn't launch a tomahawk on him and his mullahs. Boy, the world would cheer. One tomahawk can save the world. You realize that? If we had had a tomahawk in 1939, Hitler and his henchmen were taken out while giving one of his speeches, millions of people could have been saved. Same thing here. Why do the Israelis let this guy go on with threatening their existence? I don't understand this. Don't tell me I believe in freedom of speech. I don't threaten the sovereignty of a nation and say that they should all die. I don't call a nation a filthy bacteria. This is Hitler talk. The same New York Times, the same CNN, the same networks that refer to Castro as a dashing revolutionary, call him President Ahmadinejad. They should call him a filthy, dirty, degenerate Hitler who should be snuffed. If we had a sane media, the man wouldn't be walking the earth. There's a lot to be angry about, believe me. I'm in controlling myself. So I don't know what you want to talk about here. I mean, McCain just came out and said Bush should veto the torture bill. What? You know, I'm tortured by this whole torture bill. I don't care if you put an Islamist head in a vise and squeeze his brains out of his nose if it could stop the dissemination of a nuclear bomb in America. What is this absurdity to be so awfully concerned about bastards like this when you see what they do to the world and to people around the world? What is wrong with you left-wingers? Where are your brains? You'd rather see an atomic bomb, a dirty bomb, go off in your city or your town? Then put the guy's head in the vise and squeeze it till his brains come out of his nose? What are you talking about? How can you leave the country's survival in the hands of these morons, these drug addicts? These drug addicts raised on Spock, raised on Ritalin, raised on Prozac. How can you leave the country in the hands of these Obamas? 1-800-449-8255, KNEW, San Francisco, Svelana. Svelana, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Dr. Savage. I'm calling from San Francisco. We live right in front of DMV in the middle of the city. I have two kids, 2-year-old and 4-month-old. So I have three main problems, which actually came out for the time I...
You're saying you have two kids in the car in front of the DMV in San Francisco?
Exactly.
Wait. So boil it down. What's the problem?
The problem is that I'm scared about the future of my kids in San Francisco, and I just calling...
You should be afraid of your children's future in San Francisco. The schools are riddled with perverts who teach them hate the family, hate the mother, hate the father. They teach them to have two male dolls and two female dolls. They teach them how to put a condom on a cucumber. They teach them George Washington was a fascist. You should be worried about raising them in this sick city.
I have three major accidents I had in the past 2 months here in the playgrounds, in the near and the neighbors.
Oh, you're saying three incidents occurred with your children? What, the pervs try to touch them?
First, these are, if I may say, these are, I'm coming from Europe. I'm sorry for my not native English, so I've been just...
Do you have a husband?
My husband is, yes, he's American citizen, and I have...
Why doesn't he defend your children? Why doesn't he grab these people by the throat and smack them in the face if they hurt your children? Why don't you get somebody, a Russian from the Russian neighborhood, who's not afraid of these degenerate punks, to accompany you to the playground? Get a few Russian men to go to the playground and scare the degenerates off the mat there.
Yeah.
No, I'm telling you what you have to do. You have to take the law into your own hands at this point, because the city is not going to help you. And when it comes to children, I don't care what you have to do to defend them in this sick city. Have a nice day.
Savage.